You are likely not aware of it, but AI is already writing stories that you have probably read. For years, stock blurbs have been written by machines. More recently, minor league sports blurbs have been as well. Are feature-length stories and novels next? To explore these questions, we welcome Snigdha Chaturvedi to the show. Snigdha is an assistant professor in computer science and engineering at UC Santa Cruz and an AI researcher specializing in natural language processing and storytelling. My name is Dirk Niemeyer, a social futurist interested in systems that will make the quality of our lives better. My partner is Jonathan Follett, a writer, composer, and emerging tech researcher. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 4 of Creative Next, a show about future-proofing creatives in a world of AI automation. Let's get started. How do we write stories? As a writer myself, I start with an idea. It could be the very highest level idea, such as, I want to tell the story of a woman who grew up in a small village and became a superhero. Or it could be something specific about just part of a story, such as, I have an idea for a superhero who controls people's thoughts, similar to the Jedi mind trick. I could even just have a scene where I imagine my superhero overcoming a very specific challenge. Regardless, it begins with having an idea, or a purpose. Next, the work can go in any number of directions. It can go shallow, lightly shading out the overall arc of a story. It can move to the middle, blocking out a series of things that do not constitute an entire story, but will later become part of one. Or it can go deep, just bringing one great scene to life and see where that process takes you. There isn't one correct way. Still, though, whatever process I take is progressing towards something that eventually has the breadth that my story requires, be it a page, or a chapter, or a ponderous tome, and the detail and specifics that make up the actual story, the words that imbue it with life. Where that goes next often depends on the nature of the idea. For the first example of a high-level story arc, it requires more specificity. I need to develop the idea further, either by diving deeply into a particular point in the overall narrative, or shading in various parts of the narrative in shallow ways, or some combination of both. The second example involves generating a series of coherent ideas, each of which are both independently interesting or useful, but then knitting together well with the others. The final example is about what might more commonly be thought of as the craft of writing. Actually writing something that intends itself to communicate in an evocative way. This episode of Creative Next is about AI and augmented storytelling. The work of our guest and her team is delving into interesting and important problems that serve as building blocks to potential machines that can tell stories that might have been written by a human. As you will see, the technology remains a long way away from that. But as you listen to the accomplishments of her teams and the challenges they face in their work, think about the larger human processes of writing. It is in the work we do and how we get to our outputs that we can contextualize and better understand how natural language generation technology, like what is being worked on here, will eventually become part of our lives as well. To delve into the ongoing development of AI and augmented storytelling, we welcome Snigdha Chaturvedi, a researcher in natural language processing and storytelling, to the show. Snigdha is an assistant professor at the University of California, Santa Cruz, and has been working on AI and storytelling projects since she was in graduate school. Let's start learning about her PhD work, focused on helping machines to identify relationships in stories.
So early on, I was interested in understanding what makes language so challenging. And I realized that language, after all, was developed by humans and was for humans. So in some sense, languages are mirrors of the societies that we live in. The problem is that when computer scientists design algorithms that attempt to understand language, they don't often consider the social aspect of language understanding. For my PhD, I decided to explore the social angle of language understanding. After thinking about this for a while, I realized that most of the things humans say or do are defined by two criteria: their personalities and their relationships with others. So, for example, think about the way a 60-year-old man will behave or the kind of things that he will say, and that will be completely different from the behavior of an 8-year-old girl. So these characteristics, the age, the gender of a person, are determining how they would behave or what kind of things they'll say. But there's more to it. So personality alone does not entirely explain a person's behavior. For instance, the way you and I are talking is very different from the way I'll be talking to my family members. So the point that I'm trying to make is that the kind of relationships between people plays a very important role in explaining how they behave or what they say. If you understand relationships, you would be able to better explain human behavior. And since language is simply a reflection of human world, this would help in understanding language. With this goal, I wanted to design an AI system for making machines aware of human relationships. But for designing such a system, I needed text where relationships would be explicitly expressed. And an obvious choice for this type of text was stories. That is how I ended up working on designing AI system for recognizing human relationships for my PhD.
All these things about relationships relate to context. Context is, perhaps, the thing current instantiations of artificial intelligence are worst at. As we've explored on the show, AI is ruthlessly effective in breaking down games like chess, Go, and poker. For humans, to succeed at these games, the only thing that matters is how skillfully you do so. Questions of context are almost irrelevant. AIs that squash these games typically don't even consider the opponent. It is just a matter of looking at the snapshot of the moment and acting in the mathematically optimal way. This is hard to do from a computational and strategic standpoint, operating at a level that the human brain essentially cannot achieve. But what we do well is context, is our understanding and operational potential across domains, with a remarkable facility for nuance that AIs struggle with. Early on, Snigdha identified this as an essential area where progress must be made for AI to start down the path of realizing the potential its champions imagine for it. Let's hear about some of the key challenges Snigdha faced in pursuing this work.
There has been some work on modeling or understanding human relationships, but that has been limited. There were two main challenges in this work. The first was going beyond the predominant notion of binary relationships used in most prior scientific work in natural language processing. In this paradigm of binary relationships, you assume that relationships can only be of two types. For example, people who work on social media data, such as Facebook, assume that users are either friends or not. So there are only two possibilities. Hence the binary nature of these relationships. They don't assume a more nuanced notion of human relationships. And this is because developing this nuanced notion is more challenging from a computational perspective, from a natural language processing perspective. But if you think about real world relationships, they are not binary. Real social relationships can have multiple facets. For example, two people can be friends, or family member, or they could be in a romantic relationship. There could be formal or informal relationships. People could be in a supervisor-supervisee relationship, and so on. So in my PhD work, I designed an AI system that could identify these multiple facets or aspects of human relationships from a large collection of data like stories. The system would read the stories to identify who are the people mentioned in the story, and it would infer or understand the kind of relationship they are in by figuring out who does what to whom in what context.
Binary is seminal to how engineers develop computing technologies. Thinking in ones and zeros is where everything began in a certain way. Binary patterns continue to infiltrate the way software behaves, such as in the coarse framing of relationships Snigdha identifies in Facebook. The real relationships, where some sense of meaning and fulsome understanding lie, are much more nuanced. Which gets back to the difficulty of the problem facing people like Snigdha. Not only are our various relationships nuanced and non-binary, the relationships of each different person with their unique galaxy of people can differ wildly from the next person. A one-size-fits-all approach is unlikely to satisfy anyone. True understanding requires, at a minimum, context and nuance of the larger world of relationships and, separately, of my own smaller and unique world. And there are other problems as well.
Another major challenge of this work was incorporating the evolving or changing nature of human relationships. If you think about it, human relationships don't remain constant. They change with time. For example, people who you were friends with when you were 7-year-old might be very different from people who you are friends with now. And this is even more important in analyzing stories because the change in relationships between various characters is what makes the stories interesting. The AI model that we designed for my PhD work would incorporate this changing nature of social relationships between two people by making the model aware of the nature of their relationships in the past. So I would like to say that there were these two main technical challenges that were associated with this problem, and we designed AI system or machine learning systems that could address these challenges.
This all makes sense. I'm not an expert in the field, so can't proclaim that Snigdha and her team approached the problem correctly. But I do know that the things they were thinking about and attempting to address are, at a minimum, among the right things that do need to be understood for recognizing and understanding human relationships, which is what her work set out to do. How could this research translate into the real world?
This work can have multiple applications. Textual data is everywhere. If you want to realize that, think of the first thing that you see when you go online, or even when you just turn on your laptop or your phone. It's basically text and images. As I mentioned before, understanding relationships can help the machines in understanding text in general. And so better text understanding systems can revamp the overall user experience. I'll give you some specific examples as well. The most obvious use case of such method is in online social networks like Facebook or Twitter. Currently on these platforms, two people can either be friends or not, which means that on these platforms, there are only two types of relationships. But if you think more carefully about it, if these platforms could have a more nuanced notion of relationships, they could do a better job of, say, recommending friends or curating news feeds. For example, you might not be interested in the work-related material that your dad shares on Facebook, but a photograph with the rest of the family might be of very much interest to you. This could be the other way around as well, also. For example, for an office colleague, you might not be interested in their family photographs, but you would definitely be interested in the work-related posts that they share on Facebook. So if you want your news feed to be curated at this level, if you want your news feed to know what kind of relationship you are in with different people and then present only those things that are of interest to that specific relationship, the algorithm that is generating the news feed needs to be aware of the type of relationship that you have with your dad versus the type of relationship that you have with your colleague. Another use case could be in smarter email systems. These days, most email systems like Gmail can suggest to recipients for an email that you're typing. Generally speaking, these suggestions seem to be based on how frequently you interact with these people on your contact list, or sometimes even the group of contacts that you usually send emails to at a time. So these systems could be improved if they could better understand the text or the content of the email that you have typed. So for example, if you're typing an email that reads, "Hey, what do you want me to get from grocery store on my way back from work?" It's obvious that you are writing this email for a very close family member, a user with whom you are in an informal relationship. And so this user could be, let's say, your parents or your spouse or your children. On the other hand, if the user is typing an email like, "Hello, Tom. I'm attaching the presentation that you asked for. It contains blah, blah, blah." In this case, it is obvious that the intended recipient is someone with whom the user has a business-like relationship, like the user's office colleague or boss. So if the algorithm that is recommending recipient can infer these relationship types between various users from the text, it could certainly do a better job at recommendations.
This certainly feels like a nice step up in the process of automating our message composition and delivery. And it also threatens to break down boundaries in our life in weird ways. Using Snigda's example of asking what someone wants from the grocery store, that moment when it suggests your mother, your spouse, and the person you're having an affair with, well, that is breaking the fourth wall in an audacious way. If we pretend your affair partner is Tom, and the technology is using voice UI, an autofill behavior such as, "Is this message being written to Tom?" as your spouse is in the background, is just the kind of clumsiness we've come to expect from our emerging technologies. Still, all humor and weird personal associations aside, the automation of message creation tools like emails and text are already available. And the fact is, the better our machines understand our galaxy of relationships, the better they can automate away the mindless busy work from the UI. For her next act, Snigda took on the challenge of helping a machine identify a good ending for a story.
The technical problem that we were trying to address is that you're given a story and two ending options, but only one of the two options is correct or a more logical ending, while the other one is simply a bad ending. For a human, this would be a super easy problem to solve. And humans are very good at identifying which of the two endings is more sensible, because the other option in most cases is simply nonsensical. In this project, we wanted to see how easy it would be for a computer system or an AI algorithm to identify the sensible option. If the computer could solve this problem, it would mean that it has some understanding of text coherence and common sense knowledge and what makes text sensible and so on. So it turned out that it was not an easy problem to design such an AI system, and so we decided to work on this project.
This is an obvious building block toward, first, machines developing comprehension to understand stories in some meaningful way, and then potentially developing their own stories down the line. Needless to say, this could have massive implications for writing professionals. Let's hear more.
So this was a challenging research problem because identifying the good or the sensible ending requires understanding what makes a piece of text like a story consistent or sensible. And if you think carefully about it, this is a very open domain problem. For example, it would be difficult to hire someone who would be able to write all the rules that tell us what makes a piece of text coherent. This is possibly because we as humans don't even know what factors we consider when we judge a piece of text is coherent or not. In our work, we considered three important factors for evaluating coherence. The first was that we said that the ending should be such that the sequence of events described in the story made sense. So whatever is happening in the story should be a logical sequence of events. For example, if somebody is going to a restaurant, the next logical step would be that they'll take a seat, they'll order food, they'll ask for the check, they'll pay the bill, and so on. And so the ending option that you choose should describe a logical or a sensible sequence of event. Also, the completed story should have a sensible sentiment trajectory. The kind of things that are happening to the protagonist should make sense. Usually, you either read a happy story or you read a story in which something good happens to the protagonist, and then something bad happens to the protagonist, and then maybe the story ends well. So you see, I'm talking about a sentiment trajectory. And so the ending option that you choose should have a good sentiment trajectory. The last factor that we considered was consistency in terms of the theme of the story. The ending option that you choose should be tied to the theme of the story. If the story is talking about a particular environment, like somebody going to a park, the ending option should stick with that. So we presented a system that could stitch together all these three factors that I just described and judge if an ending was consistent with the story. I was very excited about this project because it gave me a chance to think about text coherence and stories in general. And it motivated me to work on a more challenging problem of designing AI systems to generate entire stories.
Those seem like three perfectly sensible factors to build from. It feels a bit monolithic and lacking for nuance of secondary factors or for special case situations that defy conventions, but training these machines needs to start somewhere. Anyway, that rolls right into the much more interesting application, shifting from understanding endings to actually generate entire stories.
We are trying to make a machine collaborate with humans to generate a short story. So essentially, the story is being generated by the machine, but the human is collaborating with it or guiding it to generate a particular type of story. Well, automatic storytelling in general is a very challenging task from a research perspective. It requires the AI system to not only speak good and grammatically correct English sentences, but also they have to tie together to form a coherent story. The generated story needs to be thematically consistent. It should have an interesting plot, characters with goals, roles, relationships, and so on. The story should have an emotional flow. It should have specific moral values, certain type of endings, and so on. In other words, story generation requires a lot of planning and thinking. And these challenges have attracted the attention of AI experts for a very, very long time. Recently, there has been a renewed interest in storytelling, especially within the field of natural language processing, with the advent of a certain type of learning algorithms, which are called deep learning algorithms. The problem with these newer, fancier algorithms is that they are less controllable than traditional natural language processing generation systems. In our work, we want to have more control in the story generation process by bringing a human user in the loop. More specifically, the user would tell the system that they want to see something specific happening next in the story, and the system would have to generate the story one sentence at a time. This is similar to the interactive storytelling idea that was very successful in Bandersnatch, which was a Black Mirror episode.
Okay, so they are working on storytelling as augmentation, not automation. The work is not on creating a machine that independently writes stories, but on developing an AI tool that is writing stories in collaboration with a human. On the surface, it doesn't sound particularly exciting. Human tells machine what they want to see, and the machine generates a sentence. Why not move the machine aside and let a trained human writer do it on their own? Presumably both more quickly and at a higher level of quality. Well, two things to keep in mind. First, change is a process, not an event. The work Snigdha's team is doing here remains in the incubatory stages of what will eventually be whatever form computational writing takes. Second, what if people want to create stories, but they don't know how to write? Recently, my 9-year-old created her first movie trailer using templates and structure pre-installed in iMovie software on her mother's iPhone. In a mere hour, she made a trailer of her dolls and various video clips interlaced with templates for high-quality title screens along with music. If not for the rubbish quality of the video she shot on the phone, and some seams in the data included in the title screens, it could have passed for a real movie trailer. A child made a media artifact which was disturbingly close to the real thing. Having professional experience custom making things like that years ago, it once cost tens of thousands of dollars or more to make such a thing. Now, a 9-year-old stumbles through her mother's phone and makes a reasonable version of the same thing, for free, in an hour. The real potential, the real impact of tools like these when fully developed and realized, is that they augment humans' ability to do amazing creative things, in the process displacing professionals whose training was once a prerequisite to even consider attempting such a thing. That, my friends, is world-changing. But we're certainly not there yet. Let's keep learning about how these steps toward those ends are progressing.
So you want the system to generate the story in a step-by-step manner, and at any step, the user could jump in and say, hey, I want this to happen next in the story. And when I say this, I mean a short phrase. And then the system would generate the next sentence that would incorporate that phrase that the user provided. So the system has to make sure that the story goes on, the story flows smoothly, but at the same time, whatever user suggested should happen in the story.
In 2016, Hitoshi Matsubara of Future University Hakodate led a team that developed a novella in collaboration with an AI that passed the first round of judging for the Hinoshi Shinichi Literary Award. Judge Satoshi Hase felt the novel was well-structured, but other aspects were lacking, such as character descriptions. That novella, called The Day a Computer Writes a Novel, was written using the following process according to the reporting by Danny Lewis for Smithsonian Magazine. First, the human designers wrote their own novella and distilled it into its basic components: words, sentences, and basic structures. Based on these parameters, the computer used an algorithm to remix a new novella out of the original work. It overlaps with technologies that, for example, suggest autocomplete in our text messaging, as well as in the kind of work Snigdha is doing. Let's hear more about the limitations she is coming up against.
So there are systems that can generate a short piece of text. There has been a lot of work in this field in general, and there are several works where you provide a prompt and the system will generate a story. When I say a story, I usually mean a small paragraph or a very short story. In general, AI systems are not good with generating very long pieces of text. In this particular work, we are generating one sentence at a time because we want to have more control in this process. So if you ask the system, if you ask an AI system to generate the entire story for you, it will, but then you might not have the low-level control on the story's content as you would in a system that is interactive, that lets the user provide prompts whenever they want.
Clearly, we are a long way away from machines competing for major literary prizes. We are more in the tool development stage, a phase where the applications are interesting and not just a far cry from output that would dazzle us, but not even functioning in a way that could be particularly useful to an actual trained writer. At its best, it could be a tool for a non-writer, but is still a long way away from achieving the sort of one-hour movie trailer I mentioned earlier. Still, progress is being made. The machines are getting better, and experts like Snigdha are working hard to push them.
So the key technical challenge in this piece of work is how to make the model aware of the interaction or the supervision that the user provides. If you take an existing AI system, it can generate text. It can keep on generating text for as long as you want. But the problem is, in the long run, these generated pieces of text might start getting incoherent.
This is an important point in current limitations with these sorts of technologies. At their best, they can generate a small amount of content that is coherent with existing content that precedes it in a story. However, the more text that AI generates sequentially, the farther away their original text gets from a set narrative that preceded its own generated content, the less coherent it becomes. It sounds more like a smart sentence generator than an actual writer.
As I mentioned before, we are using a deep learning-based system, which are notorious for being very complicated to understand. At a very high level, deep learning models, a complex collection of mathematical representations like matrices and vectors that interact with each other to give you the desired output. While this complexity makes them extremely powerful, the mathematical representations make it difficult for even human experts or scientists to decipher how exactly the system is working. Now, since we don't understand how these models work, it becomes more and more difficult to command them to do a specific thing, like instructing them to generate a specific story plot. In our work, we are guiding the model to incorporate human supervision by having a specific and important component dedicated to this information. So in essence, the main technical challenge is, how do you teach these systems to pay attention to what the user is saying, what the user wants to happen in the story? How do they incorporate this information while they are generating a story?
That's another more general limitation, and even risk, presented by deep learning models. We humans can't understand them or reverse engineer them. Their power and potential are unlocked by being turned loose on huge amounts of data to create their own models. But it turns the engine into something of a black box that we have limited agency to understand, much less, in certain ways, to adjust. Unlike physical or mechanical systems of the past, or even software more traditionally written by humans, we don't fully understand what is going on. Moving beyond the specifics of where these tools are at in the lab today, what are some of the early or logical market applications for the work?
This line of work, in general, of story understanding, can have numerous fun applications. For example, professional writers could use them to get ideas about their next creative work. You could imagine more films like Bandersnatch, but they would be produced and with the help from AI and not entirely written by a human writer. They could also be used to improve existing computer games. The interactive nature of such systems can make them very successful in the domain of training and education. For example, you could use such a system for teaching children about language coherence and storytelling. AI-generated stories could also be used to assist journalists in producing news stories. In essence, the applications that such systems can have would be numerous.
These examples for how this type of work could develop all make sense to me. Helping professional writers generate ideas is resonant with research we've done in fields like art, music, and design, which the show will be exploring during season 3. The interactive storytelling application is also a logical one, fitting into trends of where narrative games have been heading for some years, as well as pain points around either content running out before players want it to, or ongoing content generation being an expensive curse borne by the game creators. Machines are perfectly suited to provide solutions to these problems that are impractical for humans. What sort of writing will be easier or harder for AI?
So the answer to this question would depend on what type of story you are trying to generate. It is true that AI systems are being used to write stories about finance or sports, but one thing that you have to realize is that it is very limited in nature, at least as of now. For example, let's focus on financial stories. There are several companies which are interested in automatically recognizing key events from news stories, press release documents, etc., and converting them to a story so that it can be used by a human or an algorithmic trader. There are essentially two steps in this process. In the first step, an AI model is trained to automatically extract relevant events from press releases and such documents. Unfortunately, the output that these AI systems produce are not necessarily in a nice and natural format. It is usually presented as a table that can be easily stored in a database, but that doesn't necessarily convey the entire information in an easy-to-read manner. So the second step is to convert these table-like event data into natural-looking English sentences or stories. This is the step where current commercial AI systems are not very good at, and a lot of manual effort is required in this process. These stories are generated using something called templates. You could think of templates as human or semi-automatically generated sentences or short stories with slots. The job of the machine is to take a template, but it has to pick a template which is relevant for the context that it is working in. And then once it has picked the template, its task is to just fill these slots with the relevant material like events. And so what you end up with is a story that is generated with the help from an AI system. You have to realize that templates are very rigid and they cannot produce smooth human-like stories. For example, they cannot paraphrase something, and so sometimes they might look like copy-pasted text. In practice, when these systems output the template-based generated text, a human goes into the system and smooths out the content.
It's like AI Mad Libs, but perhaps not very good ones. Let's learn more.
In my opinion, the research in the future will enable us to automate this process of events to stories conversion process. This might or might not be based on automatically creating templates for a certain domain, but the generated text will definitely be much smoother and more creative and read more like human generated text. I think the harder problem would be in the longer run would be to generate longer story.
So the state of the art is rough, but Snigdha sees the path to a future where the generated text is better. That certainly makes sense. Does that mean competent novels won't be generated by an AI anytime soon?
Oh, that's going to take some time. Currently, the systems usually are trained to generate short pieces of text, and these texts are limited to a certain type of domain. For generating longer stories, I think we'll have to wait for maybe some decades to have stories that are generated entirely by AI systems and to have novels that are generated by AI systems. Computers today are getting better at generating short pieces of text like a few sentences or a short paragraph. And this is revolutionizing dialogue-based systems like Alexa or Siri, or they are also being used in generating short reports about finance or sports. But generating longer pieces of texts like essays or novels is still an extremely difficult task. The problem is that when humans write a long document like a novel, they have a narrative plan or a story plot in mind for the document. When they write a sentence, it is in context of what they wrote immediately before, as well as what they have in mind for the overall document. Computer systems nowadays are getting better at incorporating this local context of what they generated immediately before, but there's no easy way in current systems to include the global context or the plot. And so these systems are good at generating shorter sentences or shorter stories and paragraphs, but since they don't have access to the global context or the plot, they cannot generate longer documents. And current systems cannot plan the plot at a high level, partly because scientists even don't know how humans think and how they represent a plan or a plot for the story.
And it all comes back to context. Earlier in the show, we talked about context challenges, but here Snigdha introduces an entirely new sort of context challenge. The machine is not even able to keep in mind the context of the entire story that came before, or even the entire parts of the story that it itself has written. This wouldn't seem difficult to me, but that's why I'm doing a podcast and I'm not an AI researcher like Snigdha and her colleagues. And what is the practical future Snigdha is seeing for how this research will evolve to provide useful tools for creative professionals?
AI writing will certainly make the job of professional writers much easier. It will not just provide suggestions when something is incorrect, ambiguous, or difficult to read, but it will also provide writers with creative ideas and help them in clearing writer's block. The creativity and expertise of AI-based generation systems would enable amateur writers to express themselves in an interesting and professional manner. So essentially, everybody could be a writer. In domains like journalism, such systems would be able to harness the potential of AI and big data to significantly reduce the workload of journalists and enable them to focus their attention on gathering facts and newsworthy material. It would also certainly help them in expediting the process of writing the stories to provide users with more real-time news.
Thanks again to our guest, Snigdha Chaturvedi. So John, how did our interview with Snigdha impact your thinking about the work we are doing with Creative Next?
Yeah, there was an awful lot there. So I'll just pick, you know, one of the areas that I thought was of particular importance. And that is that when it comes to creative writing, AI is still in a sort of developmental and iterative stage. And a lot of the parts are more mechanical in nature than you and I might expect. So I think you put it as, as Mad Libs or, templates, I think is how she described it. And that's, I mean, we can wrap our minds around that, right? So you've got a sports story in its narrow application, which is, you know, say it's baseball, you know, there's nine innings, there's a finite number of possibilities that can happen within the game. So that seems like an AI problem, like something that you can templatize, that you can, you know, parse into bits that, you know, fit together. And of course, there are going to be some, you know, outlier situations, the no-hitter, you know, some amazing, really long at bat or something like that. But barring those, you know, circumstances, and in the, you know, sort of minor league ball, and where you're just trying to capture, you know, the general happenings of the game, I think, you know, you're safe, you know, following this AI template.
And even those special circumstances could be baked in. They
sure.
could check, did any at bat last more than 20 pitches or some, right? There's some variable they could put in there to even get that special thing in.
The mechanical nature of the writing, and in fact, it relates directly to, you know, interviews we had last season about chess and poker. The reason why AI accelerates in these rules-based worlds, you know, writing about baseball or about, you know, the market, generally speaking, is that there's a finite number of possibilities and expected outcomes. When you start talking about things like fiction, right, where, you know, context becomes important, then all of a sudden it's a much sort of broader field for the AI to unfold on and much more difficult. So thinking, you know, one of the themes that we've explored on Creative Next over and over again is just this idea that the narrow AI is powerful and the general AI is not yet there.
Fictional.
Yeah. And I think this is another interview that reinforces that from the creative perspective.
Yeah, amen to that. I came away feeling similarly. And cool things are on the way, but they're currently here in very unequal ways. And, you know, related to that, too, you know, we talk a lot about automation. And I think a lot of the things that are happening, we cover on the show, they fall into the bucket of automation, but they're more what we might think of as augmentation. Because when we think automation, there's an implication that the human is being you know, sort of exiting stage left, so to speak. With augmentation, there's an understanding the human is still present. And the automation that is happening today that's really the most interesting is in the form of augmentation. So good reminder as we're framing up the stuff that we're doing. So what did Snigdha say that was the biggest surprise or new kernel of knowledge for you, John?
Yeah, she said that, you know, when computer scientists are designing these algorithms that attempt to understand language, don't often consider the social aspect of language understanding. And I thought that was that was something that I had not considered before. Especially, she talks about how relationships between people can help define the meaning in communication. And of course, there are all sorts of levels of nuance there. And I just think about that in my own experience with voice AI and how it would be so useful if, you know, the Echo, the Amazon Echo service, understood the relationship that I have with my children, because when we're eating dinner and they go off the rails, you know, sort of yelling at the Echo to play some mildly obscene song, or, you know, discover like some random fact, and I say, no, stop. It would be really useful for the machine to understand that the parental voice is the one that should moderate the session, not the commands that are coming from the kids' voices. And that's just one example of, you know, a hierarchy relationship in that case, very simple. Yeah. But there's all sorts of other aspects to that where you want the system to be smarter than it is, and you can't put your finger on it. And that quote from her really revealed to me, it's like, oh, I want that relationship knowledge to be built in. Yeah. Without me going through and saying, you know, speaking into a microphone, and this is John's voice, and when John's voice is speaking, this should override, you know, the kids' voices, but not mom's voice, because that should override, you know.
Sure.
So anyway, that's I thought that was an important point she made.
Yeah, agreed. Very much so. I'm really surprised that AI doesn't sort of understand its own context, that there's some kind of source material. AI can write a good sentence on top of the source material, and then each sentence after that is a little bit worse, to the point where after some number, let's call it 30 of sentences, it's basically rubbish. That doesn't make sense to me. You know, if I think about myself, if I look at some existing story or context and I start writing sentences against it, each sentence is actually going to get better because I'm going to be owning it more. It's no longer me writing from a generic thing and trying to orient it with myself. It's increasingly, I have ownership of it, and I'm molding it and taking it in better directions. So it's perplexing that to me that the AI is so limited that the original source is a stronger point of context for it to do good work than its own work on top of the original source. That, to me, it's weird.
Yeah, well, for me, that actually sort of resonated because, you know, for a couple reasons. One is that the original source material has context beyond the source material itself. So there's all of the things that human writer brings to the original material, which may be anything from childhood memories to, you know, pop culture references to, like, so there's context within context that builds that first piece, right? Yeah. That you don't see and that the machine doesn't have access to, yeah. And which is sort of the uniquely human aspect, or at least such a massive quantity of data just to inform that paragraph that you would never, you know, it's going to be a while before we're populating, like, okay, every single pop culture reference possible, the machine should know, right? That seems crazy in the future. The second part of it, and this reminds me of our conversation with Noam Brown about creating Libratus and how that AI sort of attacked the game of poker irrespective of its opponent. And I was really surprised by that. I'm like, doesn't, you know, what the opponent's input matter? Right. And it does matter if you're a human being and if you have that context. But the machine approach is so alien that it's really only factoring the rule set, right? It's approaching it that way. And I think that sort of maps well to the idea that context is not a strength of AI at this point.
Totally agree. Yeah, totally agree with you. It was really counterintuitive, but I'm with you, brother.
Yeah, I feel like we're in the land of counterintuitive. Like this is an alien. This is an AI. The landscape of AI is not a human landscape insofar as it is. Sort of created by humans, but the parameters are, but the ultimate outputs are alien, very much.
So, John, what did you learn from Snigdha that has influenced your life and how you're living today?
Yeah, so she spoke a bit about all of the different ways that AI writing could, you know, sort of enhance what professional writers do. She spoke at length about that, and how, you know, maybe journalists could use AI, to help them gather facts, how writers experiencing writer's block could use AI to sort of help them find that creative spark. And that resonated with me insofar as I'm always interested in ways of modifying my process, and not that there are a whole host of AI-related tools out in the marketplace now, but I feel inspired now to go and look for ways that I can sort of enhance my process further by exploring additional software leverage, right? Like I've got a number of techniques that I already use that we can save for another time, but that just inspired me to go a little bit further and explore that space more, because I do think that there's an awful lot of areas where even in a narrow application, software can just be really helpful for writers, even if it's not sort of the full-blown, like, you know, intelligent system.
That's true. You're such a tease getting into the details some other time. Yeah, you know, for me, it comes back to my children and teaching my children. And, you know, there's a lot about what Snigda is doing that on the surface doesn't seem that impressive. It seems small. You know, we talk about augmented storytelling, which is exciting and big and impressive, and she's working on things that are much smaller. They're building blocks. But they're building blocks that will get to the cool thing at some point sooner or later. And so that process, sort of the humility of the reality of where we are and what it takes to get somewhere important, is a reminder to me in terms of teaching my children and how I approach that process of, it's just the little things, these little blocks. And if I want this bigger outcome, if I want to engineer that, I should just start with the little pieces and make my way to it. So each episode, we finish up with a thing to think about, one question germane to what's been covered on the show today. This episode's thing to think about is, if you had access to software that could write really good sentences for you, one isolated sentence at a time, would it be useful to your work? And if so, how? Think about that for yourself and feel free to tweet at us about it at GoCreativeNext. Creative Next is a proud member of Civil, a community-owned platform for independent journalism. Learn more at civil.co. That's civil.co. We are sponsored by GoInvo, a design practice dedicated to innovation in healthcare, whose clients are as varied as AstraZeneca, 3M Health Information Services, and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Learn more at goinvo.com. We're also sponsored by Design Museum Foundation, a new kind of museum. They believe design can change the world. They're online, nomadic, and focused on making design accessible to everyone. Their mission? Bring the transformative power of design everywhere. You can learn about their exhibitions, events, magazine, and more at designmuseumfoundation.org. Our final sponsor is BIF. As a purpose-driven firm, BIF is committed to bringing design strategy where it is needed most: healthcare, education, and public service, to create value for our most vulnerable populations. To learn more and connect, visit them at biff.is. That's biff.is. Please subscribe to Creative Next on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us at Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. You can get in touch with us at the Creative Next website, creativenext.org, or follow us on Twitter at GoCreativeNext. On Medium, we are partnered with Towards Data Science, where we publish articles to extend and build upon these episodes. Check out all that Towards Data Science has to offer at towardsdatascience.com. I'm Dirk Niemeyer, whom you can reach at dniemeyer, and my partner in crime is Jonathan Follett, who is at John Follett. If you want to get in touch with Snigda Chaturvedi, you can do that on email, snigdac@gmail.com. Tweet to us with questions, comments, topics, guest suggestions, and include the hashtag CreativeNext. And the home base for everything we do is at creativenext.org. We recommend you sign up for our low-volume newsletter there. That's it for Creative Next Season 2, Episode 4, but here's a clip of what you can expect to hear next time. We'll see you then.
We've been thinking a lot about where computational tools could be used by journalists to make their jobs easier and better.